All right, so we go back to the theme. What's the theme of the book of Romans? Because we're going to be going back to this over and over and over again.
Well, verse 16, right?
Okay.
Chapter 1.
Yeah.
And?
What is it? I know where it is.
For I'm not ashamed of the gospel.
Okay, because?
Our salvation.
To? Everyone who believes. For therein is revealed.
Righteousness
of God. From? Faith unto? Faith, as it is written, the just will live by faith. And so we're going to be exploring that more and more deeply and looking at it. And so Paul then starts in, like I say, the first three chapters are designed to show what? Without the gospel, no one has a hope. All have sinned, everyone. There's no, not one. Everyone has sinned. Except, of course, those who didn't reach the age of accountability, and those people are not addressed here at all. This is talking about people who are living their lives. They all need the gospel. We don't have to wonder as we meet someone, well, I don't know if they need the gospel or not. They're pretty good people. What's the answer to that?
They need the gospel.
No. Everyone needs the gospel. No question about it. And so that's going to be his point. Now, he's going to take it from three different perspectives. The first perspective is the first generation apostasy that culminated in all of the darkness of the nations in the world at that time, and of course today as well. Then he's going to approach it from those people in these nations who feel like they're good people, that they really don't need the gospel. I've preached to people like that, haven't you, where they just say, you know, I'm a pretty good person. I think God will accept me the way I am. Ever talk with people like that? They just think that they're cut above everyone else, and of course they are, but that's not the point. Does it matter whether you sin like David did or whether you sin like Manasseh? Manasseh filled Jerusalem with the blood of people, and he was a fornicator, and he brought fornication in, and he said no one was like him to incite the children of Israel to evil. But after he repented in Babylon, what did God do? I'm sorry, in Assyria, what did God do?
Brought him back.
And he lived the rest of his life. Now, which one's a better person, David or Manasseh? Well, David's a far superior person. But was David a good man? No, he was a sinner. Matter of fact, Paul brings him up in chapter 4. David said, blessed is the man whose sins are covered, not the man who can live the perfect life. Then the last point will be the Jews. The Jews were given the law of Moses, and somehow, you know, they thought their possession of the Lord, or the law, made them what?
Righteous.
Made them just special, righteous, yes. And I've met members of the church like that, haven't you, who say, you know, I'm a member of the Church of Christ. I'm better than everyone else. Ever meet anybody like that? There's people out there that think like that. And it's really sad because if we think like that, we're not humble. And if we're not humble, what's going to happen? Yeah, that's a good point. That's exactly right. And you can't reach them. You just can't talk with people like that. You have to empty someone before you can put something else in there. So we're right in the middle of that. And so Paul's now taking off. And as I say, most commentaries, and I don't really disagree with them, that the principle's the same. I'm just not sure that Paul is just limiting it to this first time. But be that as it may, it doesn't really make that much difference. In one generation, what can happen?
Completion.
You can go from knowing God and glorifying Him as God and being thankful to God to what?
Generation that knows not Jehovah.
Okay. And have we got to witness that firsthand in our generation? I mean, those of us who are, say, in our 50s and 60s, have we got to watch this country do that very thing in one generation, just shift completely from... what was taught in the schools when I was a kid and what's being taught today, the attitude toward Christian principles when I was a kid and now, and a lot of you can see the same thing. In one generation, this generation has just really, really changed. And I don't know if you noticed this week, but they've really pumped up the attacks. Did you read that article about the president's wife this week? She is a teacher in a Christian school. And they're attacking her now, saying you should not receive Secret Service help because you are supporting a school that doesn't think gays and homosexuals are right. And so they're attacking them now. And who's next? Either it's in politics right now, but where's it going to go? It's going to trickle down. So things are changing in a hurry. All right. Well, let's start at the top of page 34. They didn't glorify him as God. Now, we have a lot of this today, unfortunately, even in the denominations, where you've heard it, this high dad stuff, this God is just our father. And are they glorifying him as God when they treat him like that? When we just bring him down to our level, when we say, I think God would want me to do this or God would want me to do that, you're not glorifying him as God. And the second point is you don't give thanks. Now, let's move away from the denominations for a minute. Let's come into the Lord's church. Do we find in our own lives that sometimes we glorify God more than other times and we give thanks more profusely at sometimes than other times? It's so easy to take things for granted. And this problem here is crucial to all of us because this is the steps. Number one, you stop seeing God as God. Number two, you stop giving God thanks. Number three, you become what? You become vain.
In your reasoning.
In your reasonings. And the senseless heart is darkened. Now, there's a definite progression here from sanity to insanity. And he's going to take us through the steps. It's sanity to say there is a God, right? And what does the psalm say about those who say there is no God? They're senseless. They're foolish. They're not thinking clearly at all. And so they stop glorifying him as God. They stop giving thanks. And then they become vain in their reasoning. Now, the term reasoning here means the deliberations. It means to think through. That's literally what the word means there. Dialogismos, right toward the bottom of page 34, the thinking of a man deliberating within himself. Dia means through, and logismos means logic. It means thinking things through. So their thinking things through have become, this term vain means vanity, what is devoid of truth and appropriateness, devoid of truth, force, success, or result. And then they become senseless, which is an even stronger term, and it means unintelligent, without understanding, stupid. And the Hebrew writer touches that. You see that verse in Hebrews chapter 6. When somebody falls away after they've been enlightened, what happens in their mind? Because it's impossible to renew them to repentance. Why? Why would it be impossible? Just go back and reason with them. Look, you're doing this, this, and this. Well, what does God say has to happen for them to get there? Virgil?
Well, their senses are dulled, and they're looking. Really, what they're doing, they have placed God on a lower level, and they themselves have become a God to themselves. That my mind is as good as your mind is, God.
Right.
And that's a very dangerous thing to allow to come in. When human reasoning comes into play for what we do, what we stand for, what we preach, whatever. If we don't have book, chapter, and verse, and we don't follow the commandments of God, then we're in trouble.
Right, right. And that I created a proverb many years ago. You cannot intellectually reason someone out of a position or a decision they've made that wasn't logically and intelligently entered into. So if you have an emotional position, I know this is right, I know you're wrong, what's logic going to do?
Nothing.
You can't reach them. They've already made, you know, don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is already made up. Right?
Yeah, well, what we're talking about, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 10, and with all deceivableness and unrighteousness, and then that perish because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. So their country was right. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. So if you want to believe a lie, guys,
well, and as I was reading this today, I was thinking to myself, or actually yesterday when I was reading it all, I was thinking about Satan and wondering, because was Satan created evil?
No.
And is he acting in a logical way now, fighting against God, knowing he's going to lose?
No.
So I don't know that this process occurred, but I suspect that that's the same process that everyone goes through, and that is, you know, and I think about this all the time. I believe in God, and I believe there's a heaven and a hell, and I'm terrified to not do what God wants me to do because I'm thinking clearly based on the scriptures, based on the truth. What about these other people? I can't see how anybody could fall away. It's insane to fall away, don't you think? But here's the process. Brian and then Virgil?
Yeah, and certainly with Satan, you see when he reasoned with God about Job, we see his vain reasonings. He tried to, you know, accuse God of placing a hedge about Job, and that's the only reason he's even faithful. So we know he can reason.
Right.
And as far as human beings go, I've seen this a lot over the years of divorce and remarriage where you have somebody that may not understand that there's only one reason for divorce and so on and so forth. And then you start getting into people that are, well, it's not fair that they can't remarry. And so that emotional argument then turns into, well, I'm going to do it anyways because I feel like I have a right and it's not fair. Right. And to your point, you can no longer reason with somebody like that.
Yeah. And we've met a lot of people like that through the years that you just can't reason with them. That's what Prince was dealing with yesterday. Virgil?
Yeah, kind of stepping back to this item of glorified him, not as God. A lot of that opens the door to what we're talking about now. And this is not new to the Lord's Church. In the latter 50s, the Highlands Church in Abilene, Texas, it was well documented at one of their Sunday services, the man that was in charge of the Lord's Supper addressed God as Daddy. And there was a big stink about it.
Right.
In fact, one of our first preachers, David Harkrider, was there and spoke out about it, and they got rid of it.
Is that right?
That's no. Right.
That's the best way to deal with it, right?
Yes, you got to take it and step on it right then.
No, I mean get rid of the messenger. That's the best way to deal with that problem.
Yes. So this thing is started now. When you look and see where that group is gone.
Right.
They're the Max Lucado bunch and all this here kind of stuff. And Christians should stay a long ways away from that and not be involved in it or even endorse it in any way, shape, or form. Because when it gets to the point that we don't address God as God, who he is, then we're in trouble. And we see some of that creeping into the church today. What is the difference to the person we come to worship on Sunday night or on Wednesday night? It's still God. And we ought to be conduct ourselves accordingly on who we are worshiping, who we are teaching about.
Right.
It makes no difference where we're at. If I'm down on the street corner, I can't engage in guttural language or things that is not scriptural because so-and-so said this and that. I need to stay with what has been taught.
Right. Yeah, and this is a point I talked with Prince a little bit about. This is the one huge difference I see between the Church of Christ and almost every denominational person I've ever studied with is an absolute reverence for all the scriptures. Not just pulling this one out or this one out and building a doctrine and then not looking at the rest of them. If somebody comes to me, and I've done this for years, when I study with a denominational preacher, my mind's open. I want to hear what they have to say. Could I be wrong? Now, I'm not going to go into this discussion thinking, you know, I'm right and everybody else is wrong. I'm going to go into the discussion open-minded. But what I find is, I come in open-minded, how do they come in? We've all studied with a Jehovah's Witness and tried to reason with them, and what happens? That's not why they're there. And that's the problem here. But like I said, there's two main points to this study. The first is to kind of understand what we're dealing with, and the second is to know ourselves. In other words, is this possible for any one of us? And the answer is absolutely yes. This can happen to anyone at any time. Make sure that your devotion to God, your respect and reverence to God and his word is not compromised, because if it is, this slippery slope can end up like that. George?
The reference here to being vain in their reasonings, sometimes I think we as Christians forget about the fact that the scriptures tell us that we ought to be able to reason clearly. And that's, if we don't, study the Bible and we don't read it sensibly, correctly, we're going to lead ourselves astray.
Right.
And it's been said, and I think it's true, that true Christianity is a thinking man's religion.
Yeah.
you have to think clearly or you're going to get in trouble.
That's right. And that's what did God say about the Bereans? They were noble, which is a very, very wonderful term. They were more noble because that's what they did. They didn't just accept it. I mean, does God want us to just accept what anybody ever says? No. Does he want us to reject what everybody says? No. He wants us to take the scriptures and see whether what they're saying is so or not. And sometimes, as I say, we can learn from other people. Even though they're not members of the church, you can still learn from them, and you might find that there's something they're saying that could possibly correct. Doesn't happen very often, but it can happen. George?
Well, when we study the Bible, we need to do it from the standpoint of what does it say? We want to know what it says, not let me check and see if what I think on this point is right.
Right. Well, yeah. Proof text. Okay, so I'll go ahead, Charles.
Okay, no, just something that just occurred to me. Everybody has their idea, their thought, and opinion about certain things. You know, and when you're talking with people, you can tell by the way that they, present themselves in a way. Is that your idea? Is it the Bible's idea? Or is that your thought? Or is that your opinion? And then when you put what they believe against what the Bible is saying, if they're honest with themselves, they know, they will say to you or whatever, I thought it was this way, and you can kind of reason, you can reason with people like that. I've been in conversation with people, and you're doing it in a way to make them think about the way that they think about things,
Right.
And reason why they do that a lot of times is because they've been taught that. And it's hard to unteach somebody something that they've been taught for a long time. In other words, I got that from great-great-granddaddy or whoever.
Right.
And it's just passing on down.
Yeah.
With the idea right there. Have you ever thought about the great-great-granddaddy or whoever could have been wrong about this point right here?
Right.
And then from that point on, then they can kind of see for themselves that they may need to change their way.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's why I like Acts 15 so much. We have a hermeneutic we call command example necessary inference, and many of the denominations say we got that from Alexander Campbell. But when Peter got up, what did he use? His example. And when Paul and Barnabas got up, they talked about their miracles, which had nothing to do with whether the Gentiles would be circumcised or not, except for one thing. What did miracles prove? Why did God allow people to perform miracles? Validating. Remember Jesus of Nazareth, the man approved of God to you by what?
Miracles.
Mighty works, wonders, and signs, which God did in the midst of you through him. Well, that's what they were doing. And then, of course, James' direct statement. So it's not. The way we reason is very different from others, but it's based on Scripture, not on somebody else. And that's why I like to start with Acts 15 whenever I do a Bible authority class. Okay. In verse 22, we have a complete disconnect between what they think of themselves and what God thinks, or what is actually true. And of course, what God thinks is actually true, and that is they are professing, affirming, alleging, I'm very wise. And when you study with these scientists today, are we even on a level playing field? Or are we the superstitious, narrow-minded, leaning on a crutch idiots? And what are they?
The elite.
They're the elite. Who could question us? We are absolutely at the top of the food chain, mentally and physically and emotionally. And who are you to question us? And that's what God says here. And we see it today. And it's always been this way. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. They act foolishly. When people are standing on the cusp of being cast into eternal hell, you think they'll finally figure out that maybe they didn't live their life as well as they should have, as God's about to cast them away? And they can look back and say, as Jesus said, they're gnashing their teeth, wishing what? Wish I hadn't been so dumb. I wish I hadn't been so foolish. Which is what most people do when they think they're so smart and they do something and it ends up being a tragedy. Now what do we do? See, now we're humble, but it's too late. So they became fools, and then they changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image of corruptible men and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. So this is idolatry. This is the classic way that people who don't want to serve God, you've got to come up with a way to explain how the world got here. And how many creation myths do we have as we go back into history?
Lots.
Every culture has their own creation myth. And so these people, they accept it. And so, and do we have a creation myth today?
Yeah.
Evolution, is that a creation myth? The Big Bang. That's a creation myth.
Or they mix it, theistic evolution. Hey,
yeah,
God
or theistic, said
it
yeah. God did it, but not exactly the way he said he did it. So, and there, once again, are we glorifying God as God when we say, you know, you say you did it this way, but really we know you did it this way. So, but that's what happens. Now, the only difference, and I'm not going to go through it, but you can look at that little article I have in a box in a couple of pages, which talks about how America has followed the same path. And I found it interesting because I wrote this commentary back in, 97, somewhere in there. And I'm reading through it, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, things have really changed a lot in the last 20 years. Because I was saying then, we may see homosexuality become a normal part of the lifestyle. And where are we now? So I thought, should I change that? I thought, no, I'm going to leave it in there. I'm just going to leave it alone. Because that's what happened. It changed that significantly. All right, so these people, they started the idolatrous. And of course, it's funny because when any culture looks at another culture's creation myth, what do? You know, you look at it and you just say to yourself, that is the dumbest thing that anyone could ever think of. The Greek mythologies and you remember Romulus and Remus, the Roman creation myths. But the culture's their own creation myth, smartest thing there ever was. And that's just how it continues to go. And that's why God's in heaven just shaking his head. Got a sad set of circumstances. So they exchanged glory for something else. So God's magnificence. Now remember, they didn't, what is God? Didn't glorify him not as God. Now he codifies this. They exchanged the glory of God, a God who can create, a God who can help, a God who can love, and a God who can take care of us, to what? Images, idols. It's fascinating. To go through Isaiah, I think the last, maybe I think it's from 40 to 50, somewhere in there. There's just all kinds of God talking about this guy. He goes out and he cuts down a tree and he cuts up half of it and he makes a fire and eats himself and eats. And then he builds a fire and keeps himself, oh, I'm warm. And then he takes the rest of it and he bows down to it as his God. And then God says, they can't see, they can't hear, you got to carry them everywhere they go, they can't do anything. And now here you are, bowing down, worshiping that. Is there any sense? That, I mean, if you want to think of a definition of insanity, to exchange God for a lie. So, all right, as I say, on the what page is it here? 35, 36 and 37, I'm going to skip over that. It's just kind of a practical application of what's going on today, but I don't want to cover that in this particular class because I'd like to get some ground covered today. So, in at the bottom of page 37, what did God have to do? See, there's only two choices. I mean, you look at what happened before the flood. What were God's options?
Completely destroy them.
Completely destroy them, or let it continue, because is it going to stop?
No.
See, once you reach the bottom, it's just almost impossible to come up out of it. So God has two options. And we talked about this in our nations class a few weeks ago. When God scattered them about, now when one culture gets too bad, what can he do? Just send in another nation to wipe them out and start all over again. Or a natural cataclysm like Sodom and Gomorrah, that can do things. I'm sure you've been reading about Pompeii in the last few weeks. I've been finding relics and talking about it. And boy, that was a terrible cataclysm. But finding the things they were doing before, you can see why God might have just had it with them. And so, but you never know. We don't know why that happened. Okay, so God gives them up, because there's nothing else he can do except destroy them. And if he's destroying the whole world every other generation, what's going to happen? So, and that would work, but God promised not to do that anymore. So now he's going to find someone like Abraham. And of course, even when he picks out Abraham, is that nation very much different from the other nations? No. As a matter of fact, Isaiah says, if the Lord had not left us a seed, in other words, if we didn't have to bring the Messiah in, we'd be like Sodom and Gomorrah right now, because we are like Sodom and Gomorrah right now. Matter of fact, in Ezekiel, God charges Judah with that also. He says, your older sister is Sodom and your younger sister, and he just kind of lays it out to them. Virgil?
Yeah, really, when we look at it, we're pretty fortunate to live in the United States of America. We're headed in a dangerous direction. I understand that. But still, we're a country like we're meeting here today. We don't have people throwing rocks at us or anything like that.
Yet. Yeah.
And there's, I could be mistaken. There's not a law on our books that I'm aware of that causes me to do something against the teaching of the Scripture. There's no law like that. There's a lot of laws we have that allows me to do things.
Right.
But that's a choice that I take. There's nothing that I know within our society that says I have to do this or that or that that's wrong.
Right.
And so, if that's the case, then we're still fortunate people.
We are.
Yeah.
I've been strictly warned by some of the preachers that go to India, do not talk to Hindus. Do not try to convert them. Do not even mention them. Do not say anything about them. Because if you do, and it's recorded or seen, you're gone. They're gonna deport you. You're going to spend a couple of days in jail. And he said, I don't think there is a purgatory, but if there was a purgatory, that would be the jails in India. They're a terrible place. And so you have to be careful. Jeff and then George.
So there's also, can touch on briefly, verse 23, this change in the glory of incorruptible God to the likeness of corruptible men. In some ways, it's not just idolatry per se, but it's also, you know, if you create your own God, then more often than not, that God will mirror your own desires, interests, attitudes, whatever. For example, I'm thinking about, you know, Greek and Roman mythology. You know, the gods were basically super empowered people, men. And, you know, they lusted and they fornicated and they fought and they whatever. And it's like, you know, if that's your idea of God, well, how is that going to influence your own living? Well, you're not. It's not a greater ideal that you can aspire to. It's like, oh, well, if my God does this, then I can do the same thing, as we'll kind of see in subsequent verses.
Right. Yeah. And it's a dangerous spiral, isn't it? When you start making your God in your own image, how are you ever going to rise above yourself? So it's terrible. George?
Well, you mentioned what you were told about speaking to Hindus. I've been told by people who had been involved in some of it that in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iran, and all of those places like that, if you went in there and you started teaching the gospel, you'd probably be dead the next morning. Now, the only way you can get in there to preach to go in there and just become friends with someone, and then if they want to discuss something, then you discuss it, and maybe you can teach a little gospel, and you can teach somebody, you know, things of that nature. But you can't go in there thinking, I'm going to go over there as a preacher of the gospel or as a Christian and teach and live.
Right. Yeah, and didn't the Lord say we could be wise as serpents and harmless as doves, and that if they persecute you in one, you can flee to the next? So, yeah, we have to be careful. Prince told me, and he said exactly what you said, it takes me about 6 months when I get to know a Hindu before I will be willing to open myself up to them, and because they can entrap you, and then you will be put in jail, and you will be, for the people of India, it would be a terrible situation, so... So they were very clear, and I know from what happens in Malawi with the Muslims, you just have to be careful. You know, I want to get killed today. So, I mean, if you got that kind of an attitude, you could certainly get it done, but you have to be cautious. And so that's something that was said, and I intend to be very careful with it, because I'd like to live to fight another day. I'm not interested in going over there and getting deported right away or getting thrown in jail. So we'll let them who have to work with those people, they can do that. We're going to educate and train and help the Christians so that they can do those kind of things. Okay, so I guess that's all. All right, so God, remember, they're without, why are they without excuse? What did God manifest?
Power and divinity.
Okay, he manifested his everlasting power and divinity. Now, he didn't manifest his love or his mercy or his compassion. He did manifest enough to bring us to God, and then we can learn about God through the Scriptures. So there's no excuse for somebody to think. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think about the Big Bang sometimes, and I just think to myself, that is the dumbest, and completely out of the main. I mean, do we ever see this in the physical realm where an explosion creates something more organized and better than what we started with? See, it never happens. I don't know. Jeff, you probably know more than I do, but does it ever happen in the material realm where an explosion, an uncontrolled burst of energy is going to create something better than what we started with?
No, energy tends to randomize stuff.
Yes, it certainly does.
Well, kind of like mutations, right? Mutations always result in retardation and deformity, and it doesn't ever result in something better.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but if I really believe that, I'd be tempted to turn the gas on in my home so I could go home and live in a mansion now. Because the explosions, that could really be good. Anyway, it's insanity. If I did that, what would people say? Yeah, I turn the gas on because I want to live in a mansion. What would people say?
You're nuts.
You're nuts. But what are they saying?
The universe.
The universe is someone left the gas on. And look what we got now. All right. So we jump now to page 39. I'm sorry, I think I skipped a section here. Let me find it. Let's go back up. Oh, that's right. That's what the problem is here.
Bottom 37.
Yeah, bottom of page 37. We have quite a few points there. God gave them up in the lust of their hearts unto uncleanness. So this is, and we've all seen this, it doesn't matter what the lust is. If an alcoholic gets a lust for alcohol, what's going to happen? You're going to move to uncleanness pretty quickly? You're going to be in the gutter? Drug addicts, people who get involved in fornication, people who get involved in gambling, what happens? It's just a downward spiral until you're just completely ruined. George?
Maybe I misunderstood you a minute ago, but you said, I thought that God did not reveal his grace to people through creation and so forth. And yet, if you understand by looking at creation that there is a God, you realize also that God is providing for you to live. And that is one form of his grace, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about Christ and the gospel and the whole plan of salvation. You're not going to find that. But you're right, Paul did use the food and gladness and fruitful seasons. He didn't leave himself without witness. It was always there. But in a very light way, yes, you can see a little bit about God's grace and God's love in the physical creation. But unfortunately, with the curse of sin, how much of that comes through? How many people today are arguing that God is a very good God because look at what happens to all these people, these terrible things that are happening to them. We can see how good God is. Do people reason like that? So the curse skews things. It changes. Like I think I had a sermon a few weeks ago or a few months ago on this. When you go into a fun house and you look at the mirror, what do you see?
Distortion.
Did the material creation go through a distortion after sin? Yeah. So yeah, you could go either way on that. I wouldn't argue that point. Okay, but the point Paul is making here is that there's always a downward spiral. And Peter talks about this. He talks about people who are overcome by their own lusts and they are enslaved. So we have a lot of slavery today. Do we have a lot of people today talking about addictions as a sickness or as a terrible thing that you don't have any control over? You're just a victim because you have this? Well, that's not strictly true, because where did it come from? Yeah, you made certain choices, and those choices led to other choices, and those choices ultimately led to what he calls uncleanness here, which means defilement, and the, how did he put it, to the pure all things are pure, but to those who are defiled,
nothing's pure.
Nothing's pure. Nothing's pure. Yeah. But as Paul stated in chapter 7, we'll get there, you know, in a few months, maybe a year, but I was alive apart from the law. I was undefiled, I was pure, I was everything that God designed a human being to be, but then when the commandment came, sin came alive, and I died. And what happens next to every one of us determines, as I've said so many times in the past, the doors you open, and how far into the door you go will determine what youthful lust you're going to have to be fleeing and working on for the rest of your life. So these are critical points. And again, we like to read about this and we say, well, that was talking about the Gentiles back then, but is it happening today? We see members of the church who just get hollowed out, and then one day they come forward and confess that they've been leading a different life and they've totally destroyed their life, or they just walk away. You find out later, some men's sins follow after. And you see, you know, if I could have just talked to them 10 years ago, we could have averted this. But they were hiding it. They wouldn't tell anybody. And so their bodies should be dishonored among themselves. And you don't have to look much further. I mean, they have all these ads. You see this person who's eaten up with cancer, and they have a trach, and they're saying, don't smoke. Do you get a pretty good sense that maybe that could lead to uncleanness? And then the alcoholic who we had a guy in Oroville when I was driving an ambulance. We had to go out and get him about every 3 days because he had another drink and he was shaking and he was about to die. I mean, he just completely destroyed his brain. And that's where it goes. And we've seen drug addicts that look like that. And we read about these traffickers and sexual things that are stealing people and using them. I mean, what kind of a person could take a child and do that to a child? But that's what happens. That's where this goes. Their bodies are dishonored among themselves. And so, any thoughts? Am I wrong? Ray?
I was just going to say they call it epidemic, but it's not everybody. It's everybody that's doing it. It's only the people like you said that do it.
But the problem is we all have that potential.
Yeah, we all have it.
And so the first step into sin, how did this preacher put it once? It takes you further than you ever intended to go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes you right over a cliff. Virgil?
Yeah, that's what happened with David and Bathsheba. He
took it
further, but anyway.
Yeah, very much
further. One of the fallacies that our system and our medical groups have done that it really is adverse to helping people. They classify alcoholism as a illness, and you can get, you know, tons of disability money and all that kind of stuff because of it. Where really it, and what it is, as you said, it's an imposed problem that we ourselves have brought on ourselves.
Right.
And we can get out of that by stopping it.
Yeah, the gospel gives us the power.
That's right.
And we've all met people who have done it.
Yes.
And of course, AA does too. I mean, there's principles in the scriptures that you can get control of your life, but not if you say you're just a victim. All right, George, and then Brian, and then I think we'll close the class.
As has been mentioned, these things like addiction to drugs and alcohol, which is really a drug, and all these other things, are our choices. And yet I think it's medically been proven that some people better not take the first drink or they'll become an addict, where other people can drink for years and never become an addict.
Right.
So as Christians, we need to keep that in mind about sin. Yeah, that could be true of a lot of sins, that the first one will lead us astray we'll become an addict if we don't watch it.
Yeah, and every sin can become addictive. Every sin, doesn't matter what it is. Brian?
Yeah, and the, you know, in the heading of there's nothing new under the sun, this is why the Bible has spent a lot of time talking about the war of the spirit versus the flesh, because man is always skewed towards the hedonistic whenever they want to fulfill that lustly flesh. And we see that today, and it's so different, whether it's an alcoholic, a drug addict, a sex addict, whatever it is, it's just hedonism.
Right.
And when you fulfill the lust of your flesh and it's satisfying, it does become that downward spiral. And so as Paul talked about buffeting his body daily, if you don't make a conscious effort to buffet your body to understand that war against the flesh, then you're going to have a tough time.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. All right, we'll pick up in page 25. I'm sorry, page 40, verse 25 next week.